I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. Good afternoon. Welcome to Midpoint Friday. I'm your host, Janelle Irwin, editor of Florida Politics. Frank is manning the boards for us today, and Cindy's wrangling the phones. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, the number to call is 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org. If you're a holdover from Rob Lori's show, we're going to be tackling some of the some similar themes here today on my show. So go ahead and hang in there, and I'll get to you. I know that's maybe a little bit of a consolation prize to the famed Rob Lori, but hopefully I'll do. Frank is laughing at me. So, all right, I want to start with sort of an update on where we are with the presidential election. In case you've been in a closet for the past nearly 2 weeks, or, well, really only almost a week, Biden won, and somebody in the White House is salty and doesn't want to admit it. So right now we have some issues still in Georgia. There, Biden has a 14,149 vote lead over President Trump. Some networks have called Georgia for the Biden-Harris ticket. The Associated Press, CNN, they have not. There's going to be a recount that's going to begin Thursday, and that is required to be concluded by November 20th. It's worth noting that Biden's current lead is about 0.3%. So it's within recount territory for sure. However, historically, it is unlikely that a recount would yield enough votes to shift the tide in Trump's favor in that state. Likewise, in Arizona, Biden has an 11,434 vote lead. That state's already been called by most networks for Biden. 58,509 vote lead in Pennsylvania. That's 0.9%. So it's not in recount, really not in recount territory there. But there's a lot of legal attention in Pennsylvania right now. So Trump won a small victory earlier this week in Pennsylvania, which resulted in a small batch of mail ballots getting tossed. None of the ballots, however, had been included in the current totals. So the win is basically just symbolic. It centers on an extended deadline that gave voters 3 additional days to provide proper identification in order to be validated for mail ballots. Another legal battle in the state is also likely headed nowhere. Trump's legal team argues that it had been denied monitors during ballot counting and seeks to block election results from being certified. The suit includes complaints about how election administrators oversaw the voting and ballot counting process and centered on areas around Philadelphia, Allegheny County, and other areas that broke decisively for Biden. So why is this important? This idea that election results could not be certified is sort of the latest that we're hearing in last-ditch efforts to try to sway the election to President Trump, despite what is becoming more and more a decisive Biden win as vote totals continue to come in. And it basically says that if these results don't get certified, state legislatures could, in some instances, reselect electors to vote in a way that would favor Trump and not Biden. It's unlikely that that would happen. Pennsylvania, for example, says no. Our electors are required to vote for whoever won the popular vote. So, that's unlikely to happen. So that's sort of where we're at right now. I'm going to dive into some more details as we go on. I also want to talk about our own U.S. Senator, former Florida Governor Rick Scott. He was appointed this year to the National Republican Senatorial Committee, or to head it, rather. And that means a lot. He's basically going to run strategy for the 2022 cycle for Senate races. Marco Rubio will be on the 2022 ballot, for example. But he's already setting his sights on Georgia. And that's a really big deal because, of course, whether or not Democrats are able to have even a slim majority in the Senate hinges on both of those races. Democrats would have to win both of them in order to have a 50-50 split in the Senate, which would make Vice President-elect Kamala Harris the tiebreaker. So effectively giving Democrats an advantage in the Senate. But winning both of those seats in Georgia would be incredibly hard. Obviously, we've seen that it's possible with the statewide vote going for Biden so far, pending that recount, of course. So it is doable, but you have two Republican incumbents who are going to ride that incumbency. They are going to bank on lower turnout in a runoff election that doesn't have a president at the top of the ticket. But of course, Democrats are going to fight like hell to get as much turnout as possible. Stacey Abrams, of course, is running a massive voter registration effort, trying to get the some 20,000 voters who became of legal voting age between the general election and when those runoff elections happen in January. So there's, you know, Andrew Yang is moving to Georgia to help Democrats with their efforts in those two Senate races. So it's Georgia is really going to be the place. I don't think anybody's paid this much attention to Georgia since the early days of The Walking Dead. It's pretty spectacular for the Peach State over there. So all that and more is on the slate. The number to call again is 813-239-9663. Looking forward to hearing from you all today. We have plenty to talk about. Let's go first to Pete in Cape Coral. Pete, what's on your mind, my friend?
Thank you for taking my call. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I would tell you this. I live in a different county in Florida. And it's like day and night, and I'm not criticizing anyone. Apparently, there's a lot of Democrats where you're at, and where I live is a lot of conservatives.
Yes.
So my question for you is this. You think when Biden gets in, the Obamacare with the penalty fees, if you didn't get your insurance, you think that he's going to reinstate that also, Biden?
First of all, to answer your question, no. And here's why. So that that individual mandate, that was really, that lost its teeth in the, correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm like 90% sure that that was part of a U.S. Supreme Court process. So reinstating that would be difficult when it was something that was brought down at the court level.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong, but I believe it was an executive order by President Trump to get rid of that mandate.
There were two different things. So the Supreme Court initially upheld the individual mandate, but then later there was executive action and there was action at the Supreme Court. I'm going to have to look it up because now I'm second guessing myself. But I don't think you're going to see that go back
okay.
into effect.
And may I ask one more question?
Yeah, of course. I don't promise that I'm going to have the answer, but I'll try.
Once again, thank you for taking my call. And what I'm hearing on your station, once again, it's kind of new to me because I'm listening to the other side of the world here. Why is it your fans, think it's okay to have a list of Trump supporters for blackballing them? I mean, doesn't that sound like not uniting the people?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Well, AOC was saying that she was going to get Trump supporters and put them on a list. What's the purpose on this list for?
I don't know anything about that. I have not read anything about there being a list.
I don't understand it either because it's like, I feel like the brown shirts are coming back.
I mean, I don't know anything about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and any sort of list that she has going on. I have no idea what you're referencing there. I'll look it up.
Okay, thank you for accepting my phone call. I just wanted to see how you guys responded.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the call, Pete. I appreciate it. You have a wonderful weekend.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to look into that. Frank, have you heard anything about a list?
No.
All right. Well, if you're out there listening and you know what that's all about, I'm all ears. Give us a call, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Jay in St. Pete. Jay, you are on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, thank you very much. I just wanted to say that Pinellas County came through and selected Biden and keeping up its bellwether position. And I think that Trump should just throw in the towel and just say he lost. but he's acting a little bit like Uncle Adolf. I'm sorry to say that. There's a film that's going on WEDU mm-hmm. on last night on the rise of Hitler, and it's I don't want to face what he did after he got power, but it's kind of cringing me that we have a democracy. It's really fragile, and the listeners out there should call their members of Congress and tell them that they're, you know, that they want to keep it. So I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your call, Jay, and thanks for being patient on hold there with us. I want to kind of add a little bit more to the table. I'm going to get back to the phones here in just a couple of minutes. So if you're on hold, hang in there. I'll get to you in a second. If you're just joining us on WMNF's Midpoint Friday, I'm Janelle Irwin, and we are discussing all of the latest in the presidential race that has become a debacle. And we're also going to be discussing what's going on with Georgia with the two Senate races there and how important that is if you're a Biden supporter in terms of him having a mandate once he's in the White House. So there's a lot of stuff going on in Georgia in terms of who won the election. As I mentioned at the top of the show, it is going to a recount, which will begin on Thursday, so six days from today. And that's unlikely to yield any meaningful changes in the votes. When everything's said and done, there is a very, 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 very high chance that Biden is still going to have the lead, and he's still going to be the winner. So that's kind of a lot of us in the media are watching it, obviously, but you know, we're not really too concerned with what's going to happen at the presidential level because it's unlikely to change. What we are watching are those two Senate races. So you have they're both big, but the one to really watch is Kelly Loeffler. She was a Republican appointee, and now she's seeking re-election, or election rather, against Raphael Warnock. And this is just a really hard race for Democrats because even though there was a win at the top of the ticket in the general election, this is an election that's going to be decided in January as a runoff. There's not really going to be anything else on the ballot. It's a lot harder to turn out voters in those types of election scenarios. Plus, anytime you have an incumbent, unseating them is always a difficult task. Plus, on top of all of that, you have the fact that the Democratic candidate only received about 33% of the vote in the special election. The rest of the votes went to two Republican candidates. So, getting from that 33 to 50% plus one, that's a long road to travel. So Democrats have a lot of work to do there. Similarly, in the other race, some of the same challenges there. It's a little starting off into this runoff process a little bit closer, a difference of about 1% in the vote. So they stand a little bit better of a chance in that one, it looks like, but it's still going to be a tough battle in both races. And we're seeing both parties double down and really go hard into Georgia, which brings me to Rick Scott, as I teased a little bit ago. He's already gone full on with a campaign in Georgia. He's recruiting residents of North Florida to cross over into Georgia, since it's not that far from their backyards, in order to help with the GOP get out the vote efforts there. He's run some media already, basically saying that if Democrats win these races, they're going to get two Chuck Schumers, which I joked sounds like a really bad sitcom. Two Schumers. Wah, wah. there's a lot going on there. And then Democrats likewise are doing, they have their firebrand in Georgia in Stacey Abrams. You've also got Andrew Yang coming into Georgia to really start getting out the vote there. There's going to be a ton to watch in the coming weeks in Georgia. So that's kind of where all eyes are now in the political sphere. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, the number to call is 813-239-9663. Let's go to Debbie in St. Pete. Debbie, what's on your mind?
Hey, Janelle. I just wanted to address the individual mandate and the Affordable Care Act that your first caller brought up. Just for clarification, in I believe it was 2012, And John Roberts sided with the four liberal justices and upheld the individual mandate because the legislature has the power to levy taxes, and it was a tax. Mm-hmm. So they didn't overturn it. But then in 2017, when Congress passed Trump's big tax bill, you know, that slashed taxes for the wealthy, they zeroed out the individual mandate. They just zeroed it out. So it died, you know, in that tax bill. And then that's when a district court judge in Texas, or maybe a, I don't know what level judgeship in Texas, he said that because the individual mandate no longer existed, that that brought the, that that had to nullify the entire ACA. So the issue between in front of the Supreme Court right now is what they call severability.
Right, right.
Does that Affordable Care Act, can it still be remain in place without the individual mandate? So they're taking up this controversy that this, this Texas judge has initiated. That's all I wanted to say.
No, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I it's hard to remember all these details on the fly. So I'm always always welcome somebody who can do a quick Google without the distraction of being on the air.
So many arrows are flying at us from all directions every single day. It's impossible to keep up.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for the call, Debbie. I appreciate it. You have a wonderful weekend. I also want to throw out a thanks to Jeffrey, who sent an email to with a link to a Politico article. And this is about the previous caller had mentioned a list that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was compiling. It's sort of a list. Basically, what she's saying is that people should be basically archiving Trump supporters who say things in support of their president, who go along with the election fraud claims, things like that, for posterity, so that in the future they can be held accountable for the statements that they made and the votes that maybe they took if they're in elected office, things of that nature. And to that, I will say, I don't know that I'd call this a list per se. And I would add that the media already does this. If anybody thinks that we're not keeping track of what people say and when they say it and in what context they say it, they're missing the point of what the media does. So I would argue that this quote-unquote list is already happening. I think this maybe goes a little bit farther to drill down into not necessarily people in positions of power. I think what I'm just from a quick glance at this article, I have not been able to read it in detail, obviously, but I think that it looks like this kind of goes a little more into, you know, maybe people who in the future are trying to get a job. They might have things like potentially perceived racist tweets come back to bite them, things like that. And again, that's something that we already see anyways. Look no further than students who get denied admission into certain colleges over past things that they have said on social media. So I don't know. It seems like kind of a nothing to see here sort of thing, but that's just on a quick read. So thank you for giving us that update there, Jeffrey. I appreciate it. What else do we have? So I've mentioned the Pennsylvania lawsuits. Let's talk about why there's so much emphasis on Pennsylvania. So what you have there is, if you assume, and it's safe to do so, that Biden safely has the blue wall, and we're talking Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota. There might be a recount in Wisconsin, but the vote lead there is pretty substantial. So even if there's a recount, it's unlikely to change. So if you consider all of those, if Biden wins Pennsylvania, he wins the whole thing. Arizona doesn't matter. Georgia doesn't matter. Nevada doesn't matter. None of it matters. He just wins. So if the Trump campaign really wants to take this election, you know, all roads lead to Pennsylvania in this case, because without it, they're screwed. Even with it, they still have to claim other seats. So there's, I mean, mathematically, there's just no way Biden doesn't win this. So it really, at this point, begs the question, Is this Trump not wanting to concede that he lost because he genuinely thinks that he won? Or is this just a sort of salt the earth march out of office because he's mad? And I would say that there is evidence to suggest that there is not a serious effort to really do much with these legal challenges in these states. That I think that while they might not be saying it out loud, Trump world acknowledges that they're not going to win, that it's gone. So I'm sure some of you have read some of the news this week about the Trump campaign's frequent calls through email to voters to donate to their basically save the election fund. I mean, I subscribe to all of Trump's campaign stuff just because I like to keep tabs on what's going on in their neck of the woods. And I tell you what, I get 2, 3, sometimes 4 or 5 of those emails a day asking for donations to this, basically stop the steal sort of effort that they have going on. And in the fine print, this has been reported across multiple media outlets, so I don't want to take credit for unearthing this myself, but it's been reported throughout the week several different instances of the fine print in those fundraising terms showing that the money isn't going to where contributors necessarily think it's going. So 60% of what donors contribute now for that election defense fund goes to the Save America Leadership PAC, while 40% goes to other committees like the National GOP or Trump's own campaign. So what's interesting is that this was set up just recently as a leadership PAC, which means that there are much more loose regulations on how that money can be spent than there would be on other types of PACs. One of the things that that this money in the Save America PAC can be used for are lavish events like rallies and things like that that could be held at Trump properties, which a lot of people are concerned is that maybe this is another way for him to make a final stand on profiting from the presidency. I will let you all form your own opinions on whether or not that's the case, but there has been a lot of speculation about how setting up this type of PAC that clearly is not directing an extensive amount of the funds directly to challenging outcomes in various states is at the least it's misleading voters, and at the worst it's adding another line of profitability from our nation's highest elected office. So that's also something that we can throw onto the table for discussion today. Again, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Mike in Tampa. Mike, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I didn't vote for Trump, but I don't blame Trump for not wanting to concede to Biden. I wouldn't concede to him either. I was really bitterly sick of all those people dancing in the streets, celebrating Joanna Welfare Biden's victory. I think they really just showed an uncaring attitude about people who need public assistance. And I mentioned specifically Jim Clyburn, and James Carbell, and people like that.
Gotcha. All right, Mike, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Somebody emailed that the Georgia recount actually began today. Mm-hmm. What did I heard on NPR on the way over here that it was starting on Thursday. So maybe I misunderstood and they were talking about something else. But yes, I'm Googling it now, and they are indeed. So sorry about that, and thank you for correcting me. I stand corrected. Much appreciation there. We also got an email. Oh, no, that's spam. We don't need to... We don't need to share spam on here. So I wonder, what are you guys thinking about all of this? Like, here we are. It's Friday. what are we, like 10 days out from Election Day, something like that? I went to liberal arts school. Not math is not my thing. And, you know, we're still quarreling about the outcome of the presidential election. We have a president who has bucked all conventional norms and refuses to concede, despite there being really no evidence to suggest that the outcome of this election is in question. It's kind of scary to think about where we are. And now you have, of course, President-elect Biden is not being afforded the classified briefings that President-elects are typically afforded during the transition process. So that presents some problems. It's just a really, really strange place that we're in right now. And then, you know, in Florida, there's a whole other set of angles. You know, we had a caller who applauded Pinellas County for going blue at the top of the ticket. But it, A, was barely blue. And B, it was, there were some down ballot issues for Democrats that they no doubt are watching and talking about and Monday morning quarterbacking. You know, Representative Jennifer Webb in House District 69 lost her seat to a Republican. That was a huge loss for Democrats. And then Republicans are likewise looking at all of this, saying, "Okay, how can we repeat this and make it happen again going into 2022 when you'll have Governor Ron DeSantis on the ballot, when you'll have Senator Marco Rubio on the ballot, and you're going to have Democrats really looking for some vindication from what was really kind of a bloodbath for them in this particular election cycle, despite really winning kind of their top prize at the top of the ticket with the presidency. So I'm curious to know how you are feeling as Floridians as these election outcomes continue to dominate the news cycle in what would have otherwise been a slow news cycle following a major election. So again, the number to call is 813-239-9663. Let's go to Chris in Clearwater. Chris, what's on your mind?
Well, you know, Trump, for one thing, a couple criticisms of Trump. If folks are wondering if he's involved with Jeffrey Epstein and just Ghislaine Maxwell, check out the video where he says that, quote, "I just wish her well," end quote. And if you don't know, Ghislaine Maxwell was involved with, or accused of providing Jeffrey Epstein with the children for sex purposes. So that needs to be pointed out for those who are followers of Trump. But I don't, of course, support Biden. I don't know why that needs to be said, but it does for a lot of people. I think that the issues matter. They're all just as dirty. But what I really wanted to mention is and go into is that Trump just tweeted, quote, "Stock market up big, vaccine coming soon, report 90% effective. Such great news, exclamation mark." And that's in reference to this past Monday,
sure,
with the announcement of Pfizer saying that it's come up with a 90%, their own PR, mind you, claiming a 90% effectiveness with a COVID-19 vaccine. The same day, Pfizer's CEO, Albert Bourla, sold 62% of his stock for over $5 million. That's 132,508 shares at an average price of $41.94 each. So he just cashed out big, and you would think that he would hold some faith in his own company if the vaccine is indeed 90% effective. But, you know, it also needs to be mentioned that Peter Doshi, the assistant editor of the British Medical Journal, he wrote, back in the British Medical Journal, October 21st, quote, "None of the trials currently underway are designed to detect a reduction in any serious outcomes, such as hospitalizations, intensive care use, or death. Nor are the vaccines being studied to determine whether they can interrupt transmission of the virus," end quote. So if you take Peter Doshi's advice, and he's written in the New York Times in an opinion piece in September, the same thing, that these who needs a fake vaccine is the point. You know, nobody needs to prevent just mild symptoms. We're trying to prevent both serious conditions and transmission of the virus. And also the alarm needs to be diffused, I feel, when Fauci said that these false positives are occurring when you have the test being run at 35 amplification cycles. That's what Fauci said in This Week in Virology back on July 16th. He says that the PCR tests being run at 35 cycles and above are showing only false positives. So, and because they're detecting dead nucleotides, those are his words, dead nucleotides.
I'm just going to cut you off here, buddy, because you're getting into some weeds that they're going over my head, and if they're going over my head, they're going over a lot of people's. I applaud you for your clearly what is clearly a high level of knowledge, and you're clearly keeping yourself very informed. But we've got to dumb it down a little bit. No offense to myself or my listeners, but you know, when you only have an hour, you don't want to read like a medical journal.
I just want folks to know that both sides are not sounding the alarm on Big Pharma running. This kind of being the largest lobby in this country in terms of financing, even above oil and gas and in the military-industrial complex,
sure,
as bad as they all are. But we need to understand that they're both working for pharma.
Gotcha.
They're all working for pharma.
Yeah, I'm going to stick on the vaccine here for a second. I really appreciate the call, and you keep keeping us informed. Thank you so much for the call, Chris. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Take great care.
You too. So the vaccine thing is really interesting because obviously before the election, there was a political calculus to be made that the promise of a vaccine sooner rather than later would have been helpful to Trump's campaign. The election's over now. So I think that it's, I think that you can trust the information on what we're hearing about vaccines a little bit more than pre-November 3rd. But it's also worth noting that this is a process, and what Trump pitches is 90% effective. There's still the FDA approval process to go through. So it's not necessarily a done deal, but it is nice to see that it's in the works. And the biggest hurdle, I think, is going to be when it is available, convincing Americans that it's safe and to actually take it. I know I speak to a lot of people who are like, oh, hell no, I'm not taking that until I know what it's going to do to me. So that'll be interesting to see how that shakes out, especially when we're seeing cases rise again. Here in Florida, we're seeing, 5,000, 6,000 new cases a day, which is creeping up to where we were at in the summer spike that was really bad. Deaths are starting to increase, which are a lagging indicator of increased cases. Hospitalizations are starting to creep up as well, which is the metric that Governor Ron DeSantis himself likes to use. So I monitor daily cases of new cases among students and teachers in Pinellas County schools. And I've been seeing the daily reports get, heavier and heavier with each passing day. Some anomalies here and there, of course, but for the most part, there's been a steady uptick. So we're definitely seeing these trends increasing, which is something I think that that folks really need to be keeping an eye on and not lose sight of. It is not over. Russell in Tampa, what's on your mind?
Hey, I'll help you dumb it down. Hey, I'm wondering why no one is following Biden's lead here. I thought he was very cool at his press conference the other day. He's like, it'll be all right. Well, what about this? No, he never took any of the bait. He just said, this'll pass. He looked sort of annoyed that the media continues to hyperventilate over everything Trump does. And I'm with him on this. I'm like, why are we still hyper fixated on everything Donald Trump? When is the media going to stop? It's over. Okay. Move on already. All it does is fuel the beast. Trump is just sitting back howling with laughter that he still gets all this attention. Why give it to him?
Well, I would argue he hasn't gotten very much attention in the past several days.
Are you kidding me?
Because he's mentioned,
Have you listened to your radio station? Have you turned on the TV? It's all people talk about.
All right, so I've done this before, and I'm going to do it again because clearly it does not resonate. He is the president of the United States. What he says and what he does is news by definition. And while I do think that, television media in particular gives him way too much unwarranted airtime. Not necessarily every tweet needs to be a report. When you have the president of the United States refusing to concede an election, that is the most important news that you're going to have. And just because you don't like hearing it doesn't mean that it shouldn't be reported. So I just wholly disagree. And anybody who makes that claim doesn't understand how the media works.
It doesn't mean anything.
It does mean something because here's what, so he's not going to be successful. So in this sense, if you are saying it doesn't mean anything because he's not going to be successful, then I agree with you on that. But it does mean something in the sense that it is sowing on these, you know, deep seeds of discord within our nation. It's making people question whether or not they can trust our democratic process. That is dangerous, and it needs to be debunked. So the Poynter Institute, which I don't know if you're familiar with what it is sort of a mecca for media throughout the country, and it's kind of the gold standard of how you should do things. It's an educational arm of the Tampa Bay Times, basically. And they put out shortly after the election guidance on whether or not to keep pointing out that Trump was claiming election fraud. And their guidance was basically, if it doesn't need to be said, don't say it. But if it in the context it's required, you have to continue to point out that there is no basis, there's no evidence to support any of his claims. So that's kind of the standard that the media is operating with right now.
Okay, last one. Janelle, you do remember that Hillary Clinton traveled the globe saying that Donald Trump was illegitimate, that 25 U.S. Congress people did not even show up for Donald Trump's inauguration. That there was a resist movement. There's not.
Why are you still talking about 2016?
No, I'm just saying there's a precedent for the losing side going crazy. I mean, this is nothing new. People are acting like Donald Trump's invented something here.
Hillary Clinton conceded the election.
Oh,
and she conceded that night.
With a gun to her head.
What's no, absolutely. Now you're just making crap up. Nobody had a gun to her head. She did what historic precedent says you do whenever there needs to be a peaceful transition of power. And it wasn't just her who conceded. Stop talking. It wasn't just her who conceded the election. It was also President Obama himself who called at like 3 o'clock in the morning and said, congratulations. They didn't like the guy. They didn't like that they lost, but they admitted defeat and they moved on. This president, what he is doing is unprecedented, and you cannot argue with that. Just because there was a population who didn't like that Trump won doesn't mean that the people who were actually on the ballot, the people who are in positions of power, they absolutely did their due diligence, and they conceded when it was time to concede, and that is not happening this year.
You know that Hillary did not show up the night of the election. You do know that she won.
Does it matter? Are you really trying to compare apples to oranges here?
No, I'm trying to point out that the over-exuberance of the Democrats 4 years ago is kind of ironic now that they're going crazy with all this high road stuff, when for the last 4 years they've been calling Trump an illegitimate president.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the end of that. I'm going to move on. Thank you so much for the call. I appreciate the dialogue.
Sure.
All right. Take care, Russell. All right, well, now I'm exhausted. Let's go to Charles in Pasco. Charles, don't raise my blood pressure anymore, please.
Charles is not going to raise your blood pressure.
Okay, thanks.
and I might start out scaring you, but I'm going to let you know. I'm basically what might be classified as a Republican Christian. And I will start saying that I do believe that there was voter fraud. And what I try to do is I try to be open and listen and not pay attention to all these left and right wing stuff.
Sure.
But I believe the voter fraud was not done by the Democratic Party. I believe it was done by the Republicans.
It was done a couple months ago.
I believe that the funding of the United States Postal Service, where they were having massive layoffs, was done on purpose. He did not want to fund them. I believe that there was a big problem with the who was put in charge of the post office, and he also told the Republican Party to go and vote in person, and he knew that there was going to be a big difference in the vote count. And I, as such, I put all together, and this Republican voted for Biden. And I had a hard time doing it, but I really believe that, to me, it was being unfair and it was cheating.
Interesting.
You know? But if you look at it, I mean, this is stuff that he actually did. If you look at the media, he actually did. He was involved directly with the funding of the post office, and he was telling people to stop the count right away. So that's my opinion on it, and I think he knew that he was in trouble. And now he's starting a problem that he knew he was going to start from a long time ago.
Gotcha. No, it's an interesting take. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem.
And my blood pressure, I think, is back to normal. So thank you so much for...
You're welcome. And like I said, it's just, I'm tired of all these conspiracies, and people just look at it. Did he do that? Yes, he did.
I'm a little exhausted with the conspiracies myself.
Yeah, it's just... Just open your heart and open your mind and listen to what people say on both sides. I mean, I'm talking about Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Just listen to what they say. Don't listen to this left and right. Okay.
Thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. I don't have the sound pulled up, so I'm not going to play it because it would take me a couple minutes to find it, and that would be awkward. But if you're in front of a computer, you can certainly find online. The Daily Show did a really funny compilation of conservative comments, whether they were elected officials or Fox News talking heads or whatever. It was a compilation of probably a dozen or so different comments about how Democrats weren't accepting various different outcomes in the 2018 elections. One of those was here in Florida between Rick Scott and Bill Nelson, in which Rick Scott narrowly won. And it's just talking point after talking point about how Democrats are trying. Democrats won't admit that they lost. These are legitimate vote totals. They should respect the process. Basically, they are conservatives saying all the things that Democrats are saying right now. So it's just, you know, it's ironic to watch how that, those comments did not age well, did they? So look that up if you are interested in a quick laugh. Let's go to CD in Lando Lake. CD, what's on your mind?
Greetings. Taking my call.
Yeah.
I just want to talk about, you know, the efficacy of the vaccine. I know that most people aren't paying attention, but the devil's in the details. And the details are, this is not a traditional vaccine. It's made with RNA. And RNA is very, very volatile. And the requirements for being able to move this vaccine around and keep it stable is to have it refrigerated at least, at a minimum, 75 degrees Fahrenheit below zero. Which is not an easy task to accomplish.
Right, and it's causing problems globally with areas that don't have the refrigeration capacity to really manage
even
that.
Even in this country, we don't, because that's something that they already talked about on Democracy Now, that we don't have the capacity to provide that kind of refrigeration and to keep this vaccine safe. And there's a very short period of time from the time you've got to let it cool to be able to give it to somebody, but a very short period of time where it may lose its stability between... you're injecting it in someone and taking it out of this storage. So it's really not this panacea that everyone thinks. You know, the number one thing we need to do is to wear masks, do social distancing, and do it for at least two weeks. I think if we do it for a month, we can bring this thing under control. But right now, it's out of control. We're the laughing stock of the world.
Are you saying that people shouldn't take the vaccine? When it's available?
I'm saying I'm not going to take the vaccine because no proper testing has been done. There was one of the experts on Democracy Now! Talked about the fact that when they said that it had a 90% success rate, that was only over 7 days. She says, well, let's look at their group 2 months out and see what that success rate is. Because 90% over 7 days is not something that anyone should put any faith in. At least 2 weeks at the very minimum because of what we know about the virus and how it acts. But 7 days doesn't get the job done. And then there's that issue of being able to keep the vaccine stable.
By the time this vaccine becomes readily available, and it's going to be quite some time, I might add, because it's even when it becomes available on a limited basis, that's going to go to your highest risk patients first. It's going to go to first responders, healthcare providers, and things like that. So in order for it to be available to just the average common citizen, it's going to take a while. So by the time you get to that point where it's readily available, we're going to have answers to the questions that you're asking.
Well,
I mean, I get what you're saying. Like, if somebody handed me a vaccine right now, I'd probably have a little bit of pause. But, you know, 3 months from now, we're going to know a lot more in 3 months.
But as on the show, Healthy Living or whatever it is that Rob hosts with the doctor, he pointed out that the best way to deal with the pandemic is to do the right thing. That we can crush it without having a vaccine. We don't need a vaccine. That's taking too long, and too many people will die before such thing
happens. I mean, I think you can manage it well if people were willing to do what they need to do. I hear you on that, but. We need a vaccine. I mean, this sounds dangerously like an anti-vaxxer conversation, so I'm skating a line here.
No, it's not. It's about being able to trust that this thing goes to the proper channels and all that stuff before it happens.
And I think you're going to see that unfold in the coming weeks.
Well, it's
they're not handing it out like candy right now, so I don't think you have much to worry about.
It's going to take a lot more than a couple of weeks, as you said. My point, though, was just saying that if we were to shut down, like New York is trying to do now, for 4 weeks, with everyone masked, social distancing, and all that kind of stuff, that brings the virus under control. That we don't need vaccine. That's not the best way to deal with it. The best way to deal with it is to bring the vaccine under control and stop it spread. And that's just
I totally disagree.
I think they need to work in concert
personally. But I appreciate your thoughts on the matter. Thank you so much for the call, CD. I appreciate you.
Keep on you. Stay healthy.
All right. You too. Yeah, he's absolutely right in the sense that if people just followed the guidelines that we're getting from health officials, social distance, wear masks, avoid crowded places, if people just did those things, yes, we could absolutely get this under control. But so my husband and I went for a bike ride last night, and we decided to stop at a restaurant that has a really nice waterfront patio. And have dinner there. We felt like it being an outdoor area, that it would be, plenty safe. We've been very, very reticent to go into public. I only just recently started grocery shopping again. So, anyway, so we get there and I was incredibly disappointed to immediately see that none of the staff, despite a county ordinance requiring it, was wearing masks. The people in the kitchen were not wearing masks. The people behind the bars were not wearing masks. There was no signs on this establishment whatsoever, and I'm not going to call them out saying that masks were required. I mean, clearly this was an establishment that just completely was like, screw the rules, we're not going to do it. And I did report this restaurant, but I don't think I need to publicly shame them on the air either. So anyways, my point is there are clearly people out there who are not following the rules, who think that they're not necessary. And think that this thing is over. And as long as you have, groups of people who are of that mindset, we're going to continue to have problems. And it sucks for those of us who are following the rules, because it's the people who aren't following the rules that are getting us sick. So, screw those guys. Let's go to Barry in Palm Beach County. Wow, all the way from Palm Beach County. Barry, what's on your mind?
How you doing?
I'm great.
When it comes to Trump conceding, I don't think he should concede right now. And the reason I say that is because he's actually showing America right now the issues that we have with the election system.
Which are?
Well, they're finding a lot of votes that people are dead. They're deceased.
That's not true.
Well, that's what they're saying on, there's a news channel called Newsmax. Have you heard of
it? Okay, well, that's your first problem, is watching Newsmax. that is not a credible source, and you couldn't pay me to say otherwise. All of these claims that places like Newsmax are spewing, OAN is another network that's doing the same thing. Can you turn your radio or your TV down or whatever?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I got it.
Thanks. Sorry about that. these have all been debunked. There was an issue. I want to say it was Pennsylvania. It might have been one of the other blue wall states. So I apologize if I'm misappropriating the state. Oh, that's your GPS telling you where to go. Okay.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Now I hear what it is. Okay. Well, I hope you're driving safely. Anyways, like, so there was this thing. Oh, people born in 1900 were voting. It was a place marker. That was a technical marker for a database that was used when a year wasn't necessarily known. So it was a completely explainable anomaly and was very quickly debunked. So there's a lot of these examples that are being thrown out about it. And this is not the first time that people have been like, dead people are voting. Every election, we go through this crap, and every election, it's debunked. Is there occasional election fraud? Absolutely. Does it happen in any meaningful, substantial way that changes the outcome of elections? No, there is zero evidence to support that whatsoever. So I mean, if you want to watch Newsmax, be my guest, buddy, but you are not getting credible information.
Well, it's a new news channel that I just came across by accident, and
well,
it's
what Trump wants. Trump is now favoring Newsmax over Fox News because Fox News is not supporting him as much as he wants them to anymore. So Newsmax literally exists just to support the president. So if you want credible information that is not skewed one way or another, the Newsmax is not the way to go. Fox News is less biased than Newsmax.
Okay.
That says a lot.
So back when Trump was first elected, did the Democrats not continuously go after him to have him impeached? What is the difference here with him going after the Democrats now, saying that they're doing stuff illegally?
I mean, the Democrats would argue that there was ample evidence to impeach the president, and he was impeached. Right. And there, you know, you look back through the Mueller report and the various other documents that were unearthed during that process, and there was a lot of evidence of questionable activity. The only reason that Trump was not convicted in his impeachment was because you had a Republican-controlled Senate. If you had had a Democratic-controlled Senate, he would have been gone. So I totally hear you. From the conservative perspective, you can make the argument that it was a, quote, witch hunt. But from the liberal perspective on the left, you know, you have people who saw very credible evidence of misuse of office. So, you know, it just really depends on who you ask. And I hear you, and I can totally see why a conservative who supports Trump, or anyone who supports Trump for that matter, would use that as an argument, because it resonates with the people who share your views.
Right.
But the people who don't share your views think it's just, you know, hogwash. So right. It really just depends on who you're talking to.
So do you think personally that there's going to be a, I guess it would be a runoff, where back in 1824, I believe it was Andrew Jackson, where the votes went to the House of Representatives?
No, that's not going to happen. Biden is going to be inaugurated on January 20th. It's going to happen. The Trump team is stomping their feet and digging their heels in, but they're not going to stop Biden from taking office on January 20th. That is my educated prediction. Barring something completely out of the ordinary happening, you're not going to see Trump still in office.
My last comment. I am a Trump supporter.
I've gathered.
But no matter who takes office, whether it's a Republican or Democrat, you must respect that office and that person.
They are
your president.
I'm glad to hear you say that, Barry, and I'm going to leave it at that because I've only got a minute left and I want to get to one more call. Okay. Thank you so much for the dialogue. I appreciate it. Let's go to Ken in Safety Harbor. Ken, real quick for me, buddy, just let's keep it to 30 seconds. What's on your mind?
Just wanted to give you the perspective of what's been going on in Australia, where they've got zero cases and zero deaths, which is a little better than what's going on.
Yes,
here.
Indeed.
They've done it by having lockdowns. They've done it by having patrols of police and soldiers out on the streets, rounding up people and arresting people who are not wearing masks and are not observing social distancing. What's the cost that you're paying? Personal freedom versus people dying.
Yep.
Australian government feels that people not dying is more important. But you can't see that in this country.
Quite the contrast there. Ken, thank you so much. I've got to cut you off because I'm out of time here, but thank you so much for the call. I could listen to you talk with that accent all day long. Stay tuned for Joellen for Art in Your Ear. Thank you so much to Frank for manning the boards for us today, and to Cindy for wrangling the phones. From all of us here at WMNF Tampa, happy Friday.